They ask, "How are you doing?" And I heard this person say this response, and I love it. "I'm doing better than I deserve." And I really truly think a lot of times that's what it is, because we deserve something a lot.
We live in seasons that sometimes we cannot change, and we sometimes even believe that maybe we deserve that season. I want to start out with a question. Think about the last time something in your life, a season, didn't go the way you planned. Maybe it was a relationship, a job, a diagnosis, a door that closed when you thought for sure it was going to open. Then ask yourself honestly, what was your first instinct? Now, I think there's two different things that most people come to. One is that they want to reach for control. They plan harder, worry more, or quietly wonder if God missed something. The other one is that you think, okay, well, this is just happening. It was God wants it to happen, and therefore I can't do anything about it. We predetermine that everything's happening by fate. So we just throw our hands up, clench our fists, and say, it is what it is. And I do believe that both categories, both instincts, can do actually real harm. 3,000 years ago, there was a man named Solomon. He sat down and wrote some of the most honest descriptions of human life ever put to paper. No spin, no false comfort, just the truth about what it actually feels like to live. Jonathan read the first verse in Ecclesiastes 3 that says, "There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens." A lot of times we stop with that verse. We just leave that as our bumper sticker or that make a meme out of it. And we just kind of skim through the rest of it. So I want to take a moment and we're going to read through that a little bit. What Solomon says. He starts out with, "There's a time to be born and a time to die. There's a time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. There's a time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter and a time to gather. Time to be silent and a time to speak. A time for war and a time for peace." Now, those aren't just good sayings that should just be thrown on a greeting card. They're the brutal, honest description of what a real human life looks like. And notice, Solomon does not separate the good seasons from the hard ones. He puts them side by side: birth, death, laughter, tears, as if to say, this is all a part of the same story under the same God. And that's kind of the idea I want us to kind of think about this morning. How life unfolds in seasons. Some we choose, many, you and I both know we do not. And the question underneath all of it is this: what do we do with life that we cannot fully control? I think the answer has something to do with what I like to call open hands. So here's the idea I want to put on the table this morning, plainly and clearly, right up front. God is sovereign over the seasons of your life, and your choices still genuinely matter. That's it. That's the whole thing. It sounds kind of simple when you just put it that way, doesn't it? But I want to push on it just a little, because most of us are living on one extreme or the other of that. Some of us have had landed on the sovereignty side so hard that we have probably just leaped into fatalism. Everything is fixed, everything is predetermined. My choices, they don't really matter anyway. So why bother even trying? Why fight? Why have hope? So that is not faith. That is resignation dressed up in theological language. And then some of us, and I'll be honest, I probably swing more to the other direction. We're gripping our lives, or trying to, so tightly, so convinced that if we just plan hard enough, we just work enough, and make just, you know, all the right moves, we can control the outcome. And then when life doesn't work the way that we planned, and brothers and sisters, I will stand up here today and preach that I can tell you right now, life does not cooperate the way we plan. So what do? Most of us, many times, we tend to fall apart. But here's what I believe Scripture is teaching us. What I want us to spend time this morning trying to unpack. We are not in ultimate control. But we are not without genuine responsibility either. Micah 6:8 puts it this way. He says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." But you are walking with your... Notice what the verse does here. It calls us to act. It calls us to love, to walk. Those are real verbs, real responsibilities. But we are walking with a God. We're not walking in front of Him. And that's a hard balance right there to keep. Having God being completely sovereign, but yet having real freedom. Let me explain what I mean, because this is where it stopped being just theological or theory, and it starts becoming real life. Ecclesiastes 3 is not a fatalistic passage. It doesn't mean that these are seasons and you just got to deal with the season you're given and stop, nothing you can do about it. No, what Psalm is not saying is that your choices are irrelevant. He's observing something true about our human experience. That life, it contains seasons often beyond our control. We don't choose when we are born. We cannot prevent every tragedy. We cannot force every opportunity to arrive on our predetermined timeline. And here's what the passage does not say. It does not say that because seasons exist, your choices within them are just completely meaningless. You know, Solomon says there is a time to plant. And if you know, if you've ever done any planting before, you know that that you have to be active in it. You have to make choices within. You have to decide, okay, do I plant this tomato bush in the winter? No, you have to make good choices when you plant, when you put the seeds in, when you water. It takes a choice on you when to do that. There's a time to speak, but you still decide what you say and how you say it. There's also a time to just be quiet, but there's also a time when you probably shouldn't be quiet. There's a time to heal. And healing, it rarely just happens to you. It also takes a choice, a willingness, an open hand. The season does not make the choice for you. God establishes the framework. You still live inside with real freedom and real responsibility. And then Solomon says something in verse 11 that I think is a theological heartbeat of this entire passage. He says, "He has made everything beautiful in His time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end." That word eternity, the Hebrew word olam, means God has placed an eternal longing inside of every human soul. An awareness that there is something more than what we can see right now. We're not just living moment to moment, season to season. We know deep down that this world is not the whole story. And because of that, we cannot hold our season. And when we know that it's not the whole story, that's a way that we can, instead of clenching our fists, we can open our hands and hold our seasons a little bit more loosely, even in the painful ones, even in the trying ones. Trusting the one who sees the whole thing from beginning to end. I want to think about Joseph for a second. At 17 years old, you know the story, he had a dream. And then his own brothers stripped him of his robe, threw him in a pit, sold him to some strangers for 20 pieces of silver. He didn't choose that season. He didn't plan for Egypt. He didn't sign up for Potiphar's house or the false accusations or the prison cell. And yet every single one of those seasons was preparing him for something special. His brothers, they made real sinful free choices. But God didn't cause that evil. He didn't cause the brothers to make those evil choices. They made them on their own. But he was never not in the room. He was never not with Joseph. He was there working, taking that opportunity, molding it to do something greater, something that would serve his purpose. Joseph eventually looked to the brothers and he said to them, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good." How powerful is that? I don't know about you, but it is hard sometimes to have something hard, a bad season come through and go, "You know what? This is okay because God is going to be there with me." It's so much easier sometimes just to look at it and go, "Where are you, God?" Look what Joseph said. He says, "But God intended it for good." Now, sometimes the seasons we go through, they're tough. They can be rough. I promise you, God is still there with you. We're not puppets. We're not just being held up by strings by God. We live inside God's sovereignty with open hands. And even when those hands, and Joseph did the same thing, he lived in open hands, even when his hands were in chains. God is so sovereign. He is so wise. He is so capable that he can work through our choices, around our choices, and sometimes in spite of our choices. Why? In order to accomplish his purpose. So what you do with your life, the decisions you make, they generally do matter. And I've seen this up close. As many of you know, my grandmother passed away a few weeks ago. She lived to the remarkable age of 103. Just think about that, 103. You know, she was there before there was even a black and white TV. She was there when the first person walked on the moon. All the things she saw, all the experiences she lived. Now, what you may not know is that our family was convinced that she wasn't going to live a few months after my grandfather passed away. And that was 14 years ago. Even I remember at that time, we quietly started preparing ourselves mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We braced for the ultimate outcome. I remember telling my boss, I said, hey, Miss Eskival, you know what? I'm probably going to have to call in a few days because I don't think my grandma's going to make it. But then a year went by, then another. She made it to her 100th birthday, still strong, still singing. Then she took a hard turn around, I don't know, it was either 101 or 102, and by golly, my aunt thought for sure this was it too. But then she got better, she got stronger, She was singing again. She was even, I saw videos of her in her walker kind of dancing around. Little old lady just is so cute. Then, a few weeks ago, we did get the call. Aunt Cecilia calls up and says, Jason, she's unresponsive. She barely has any heartbeat. Of course, for whatever reason, when I heard that, I heard Grandma had passed away. So I go immediately to my boss and says, my grandmother passed away. I need to get my stuff together. Well, we show up there, drive all the way up to Oklahoma, and she wasn't dead quite yet. She was still in the bed breathing. And I'm thinking in my head, whoops, I totally misread that. Knowing the history of Grandma, she's probably going to make it even longer. And even that night, sitting there next to her in her bed, I said Lord's Prayer over her, left for a little while, and then Candace, my aunt and I, we went back in, sat down with her, and I told her, Grandma, I love you. And I swear that she made a sound, something to the point of either I love you or something to that. And I could be wrong. It could just been the body having air coming out that triggered a vocal cord that made a sound. But in my head, I thought, well, looks like Grandma's going to at least make it through the night. So what do? I decide to go back to the motel because Candace, she's going to stay there and help my aunt administer her medication. That way one person doesn't have to stay up all night. And I thought for sure, you know what, she's going to be make it through the night. Matter of fact, I was even thinking in my head, now I'm going to have to call my boss and tell her, hey, Cecil, you know what, I'm not sure if I'm going to have enough breathing time because my grandma might last another week or two. So I go and take some medicine to help me sleep and relax. And 30 minutes later, I get the call from Candace saying, Grandma took her last breath. So me, all medicated up, makes it back and gets to see her. But I wasn't there when she did that because, you know what, I already made my plan. Remember a joke I heard once that said that, you know, if you want to really make God laugh, just tell him your plans. I had made my plans, made my decisions, made my calculations, but you know what? God had completely different plans entirely. He had a different season at that moment. And that's the picture. God holds the seasons. We live inside them with real choices, real voices, with real love. C.S. Lewis puts his finger on it exactly why it's so hard for us to understand this sometimes. I quote from this book quite often. If you've never read it, I highly, highly, highly encourage you. There's free copies all over on the internet. It's Mere Christianity. In that he writes, the almost impossibly hard thing is to hand over your whole self, all your wishes and precautions to Christ. Not just the big dramatic stuff, the plans, the backup plans, the things you are quietly white knuckling in the background, hoping that nobody knows. That is not fatalism. Lewis is not saying your choices just disappear. He's saying your choices get reoriented around a will greater and wiser than yours and mine. We're still choosing. We're still living. But we are doing it with open hands instead of clenched fists. Kind of think of it like a symphony. God's a composer. He has a key. He has the movements. He has the destination where the piece is supposed to go. But every single musician still has to decide to play the notes. Still have to make the choice whether they're going to follow the rhythm or not. They're real choices in a real symphony. Our lives aren't some pre-recorded event. They're live. They're live performances. So what does this actually look like? How do we live with open hands in a world that keeps handing you things you just didn't ask for. I want to look at a person named Louis Zamperini. He was an Olympic runner. He was also a World War II bombardier. He was shot down out of the Pacific, survived 47 days on a raft in shark-infested waters, and then he got captured by the Japanese and brutalized in their prison camps for over 2 years. A man who had every reason to close his fists around bitterness and never let go. And for a while, that's exactly what he did. After the war, he became broken. He started drinking, raging. He was consumed by nightmares and hatred for the men who had tortured him. But then, a new season came. He encountered Christ. And one of his key verses that he lived by was Romans 8:28. It became his lifeline. It says, "We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose." Look at that. It says, "In all things," including 47 days on the raft and 2 years in a prison camp. What happened next was not a passive behavior. Zamperini made a real, costly, deeply human choice. He chose to forgive. Colossians 3:13 says, "Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you." He traveled back to Japan. He met face to face with the man who had nearly destroyed him. And he extended grace. Man, think about that. This guy was tortured by these guys for 2 years. Beaten. Humiliated. But yet, he was able to show them grace. That is open-handed living right there. He could not control what happened to him, but he could control what he did with it. And what he did with it changed him and the people he forgave. And here's the application, plain and simple. Open hand does not mean just passive hands. It means you stop trying to control what was never yours in the first place to control. And you start pouring your genuine freedom into what is actually in front of you. Paul says in Philippians 4:11, "I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content." He learned. He didn't just download it. He didn't just inherit it. He didn't just get it by some osmosis. He learned. That's active. He learned through the different seasons, the good ones, the bad ones, the ones he chose and the ones he didn't choose. You cannot control the diagnosis, but you can choose to walk through it. You can't control what someone did to you, but you can choose whether bitterness gets the last word. You cannot control the timing of the season you're in, but you can choose to be fully, fully present in it. That is the life God's inviting you into. Not resignation, but active. Eyes open, hands open to trust. Maybe that's where you are right now. You want to trust God, genuinely. But something feels off. Maybe you're in a season that just flat out doesn't make sense. A door that closed when you were sure it was supposed to just open. A relationship that is harder than you expected. A chapter of life that is taking longer than you ever planned. And you're sitting here this morning thinking, "I want to have open hands. I just don't know how to let go of this particular matter." Brothers, sisters, that's not a lack of faith. That's honesty. Coming from experience, I can tell you, God can work with honesty. The tensions you're feeling, they're real. The uncertainty is real, but so is the God who is holding the seasons you're standing in right now. God is sovereign over your seasons, every season of your life, and your choices, they do generally matter. Not one or the other, but both. In verse 11, Solomon says, He has made everything beautiful in His time. Not your time, His time. And verse 14 adds this, Everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to and taken from it. His purpose will not be thwarted. He is not scrambling. He is not surprised. He is not behind. And you are not a puppet. What you do in the season you're in matters, not just you, but those around you. How you love the people in your front of you matters. Whether you choose bitterness or forgiveness matters. Whether you show up or shut down matters. The seasons are His, the choices are yours. And He is wise enough, sovereign enough, and good enough to work through them. And here's where I want to leave this morning. Proverbs 3, 5 through 6. It says, Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not onto your own understanding. In all your ways submit to Him, and He will make your path straight. Not some of your ways, all of them. The ways that make sense and the ways that don't. The seasons that you planned and the ones that blindside us. The chapters you are proud of and also the ones you wish you could rewrite. All of it. My grandmother did not know she had more years ahead of her. She just kept living faithfully inside the season she was in. Zeppermini didn't know that God would do with his suffering. He just made the choices to open his hands and let forgiveness do what bitterness never could. We don't know what God is going to do with the season we're standing in right now. But we can choose today, this morning, to stop clenching and start trusting. And that's not weakness. That's faithfulness. And that's exactly what God does with His best work. In open hands of people who are finally done pretending they were ever in charge. And I don't know where that leaves you today. I don't know what season you're in right now. I don't know what struggle you may be having. But I can tell you, clenching your fists isn't going to get you anywhere. At some point, you have to stop and you have to open up and say, God, I can't do it. That's when God comes in. That's when you open your hands and He starts taking control. We're about ready to sing a song here in a moment. Today, if you haven't asked Christ into your life and haven't been baptized, I would urge you, don't clench your fists and think that you got it somehow. Open your hands. And if you're ready, there's no better time than to come forth and be baptized. So come if you will.